Time for another check-in with State Representative Techie Chan of Quincy for our weekly updates on what's happening at the state and city level during this pandemic. Hey, Techie, nice to see you again.
Hey, great to see you, Joe. It's another week, and it's a whole lot cooler from last week since we last talked.
Boy, that's for sure. Here we are approaching the last weekend of summer, believe it or not. It's not going to feel like it, that's for sure. I guess the biggest development really locally has been kids are back to school, quote unquote, back to school, if you will. What have you heard from your constituents about how that's going?
Well, I talked to some constituents, but mostly I've talked to my friends from different towns talking about school. And everyone's very nervous, my friends with kids, whether it be young children or teenagers, regarding going back to school right now, regarding how it's done. I think it's really the question. Not so much that you don't want the kids to go to school. But there is some relief, I think, everyone agrees, that when your kids are back to school, you can get along with your life at home at some level to get other things done, whether it be work or home-related. So that's very much on my friend's mind, in addition to the safety in schools. You know, there's a move for a hybrid model in many places. I know that Quincy, they've done some homeschool and in-class. Other places have had outbreaks, unfortunately, before school started, which delayed their opening, which is frustrating. Places like Lowell, I think you may have seen the news, was going to open, did not open because they didn't have the air filtration system in place. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of stories of logistical issues in many communities at different levels about this. We do care about the safety of the students, the safety of our parents, and the safety of the administration and the staff at the schools as well. I mean, you know, the people, as we talked in the past, about immune compromised, people recovering from cancer, people who are diabetic, who still go to work. But never before in a condition like this where an unknown carrier of COVID-19 can infect you and, you know, cause you severe illness and perhaps death. So I do respect everyone's very serious concern about their personal safety, and balancing act is very difficult. It's going to be very expensive. I mean, I watched a story about Malden Catholic. They spent $3,000 on each room for modern virtual technology for online education and hybrid model. That's not feasible for every school to spend $3,000 in the classroom for the most modern technology. And then we've experienced this now, hopefully won't happen in this Zoom call, but Zoom's overloaded. It's dropped my meetings more than once the past 7 days. There is an overload on the infrastructure, the telecom system, and the Zoom system, and any other video media you're using right now. Until they get normalized under essentially the new high usage for a bit. So, and that also brings up some concerns about neighborhoods that do not have access to high-speed internet, particularly places like Cape Cod, Western Massachusetts, where they can't even get good cell signals in certain locations. So you can't even hotspot off your phone. And the lack of proper bandwidth can be very challenging if you get dropped in the class, you know, or you get a frozen screen, or you don't get good sound coming through. Well, these are things that continue to be a challenge for everyone. And, you know, when I talk to different people in different communities, you know, my friends, everyone's facing somewhat of a different challenge. It's hard. It's very hard on everybody.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anything that the state can do to force telecommunications companies to improve service due to the state of emergency.
Well, the telecom companies had already ramped up their bandwidths with no extra charge, especially the cell phone companies. They temporarily did that throughout the summertime period. They're all, you know, everyone's reevaluating their infrastructure systems. The harder ones is really the rural areas. So if you're, you know, I'm not talking about a dead spot in the city, you know, of three houses. I'm talking like a dead spot of like 2 square miles, you know, sitting in the Berkshires. And they won't run a line out there because Comcast's economically impractical. Honestly, they're not required by federal law to be, quote unquote, the last line. They don't have to put in the last line. There's not enough customers on the line, then the infrastructure cost doesn't make sense. Unlike Verizon, which is still semi-regulated by the state, it has to put the last line. But even then, copper wire isn't as good as fiber optic. And there's a lot of copper wire still in the state. I actually live in a copper wire section of Quincy. I'm one of the few sections, I think, at this stage, that isn't fiber optic. So my copper landline phone, believe it or not, I still have a copper landline phone, isn't very reliable compared to fiber optic. So you know, it is great during a storm because the power goes out, the copper line is guaranteed to keep running. But at the same time, though, the quality of it is degraded because of the nature of copper. So even if we try to mandate telecom companies to go out there, there's the infrastructure problem in rural areas or sparsely populated areas of the state to get them wire. And in the case of cell phone towers, you have to build a cell phone tower. Mm-hmm. Siting a cell phone tower, if anyone's ever been on a zoning board meeting, is not easy.
No, nobody wants it in their backyard, that's for sure. Yeah.
No, that's really just the bottom line, right? So to get, you know, good signal, even in the right now 4G network, you still need a tower in the strategic location to bounce signal from tower to tower. And getting one put up is not an easy process. 5G is on the way. I think we'll all talk about 5G. And it is generally faster than 4G and faster in most low-end commercial wired internet, but it also requires putting up new technology as well. And the telecom companies need to start updating their the modules on the towers to include 5G capacity. So, and there's like microwave 5G versus non-microwave 5G and all that other stuff, which is kind of getting to the weeds. But you know, it takes time for this equipment to get up there, and of course, they have to get approved by zoning boards every time they try to, you know, move a massive update.
Sure. And obviously, as you just mentioned, the legislature still is not back in at Beacon Hill, right?
No, we're still working remotely. My exciting part of the week is I figured out how to print small citations on my home printer. Because I know these little things that make you happy. We can't go into the office regularly to print large citations. Most of my staff does go to work by T. The T is scary. I think everybody knows that. You're in a closed space, you know, even with masks on, there's still a lot of hygiene issues. I know they sanitize the tea, but it's not like they're wiping down every time you click on and off. I mean, that's just not realistic. So, I mean, there's a lot of personal safety, increased personal safety, you know, being together with other folks in confined spaces. And even T ridership is very low right now. Wollaston T station parking lot is only a quarter full on weekdays, which shows you how low the ridership is. So, I mean, I'd rather not put people at work at risk. You know, we're all still working remotely, and we're doing staff calls 2 to 4 times a week, maybe more depending on the circumstance. And I'm actually running a public hearing after talking to you at 1 o'clock. So we just have some very simple home rule petitions, not very controversial, don't expect too much testimony. But even on bills, we don't get a lot of testimony or no testimony. You know, we still think it's important to provide a public forum on Facebook Live, which you can get on my Facebook, to even if it's a short hearing, to show that we are keeping things open to the public, at least visibly.
Yeah, and there actually was some action on a bill this week, right?
There was action on a bill this week?
Yeah, just yesterday we talked about regarding discrimination against Asian Americans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. The this is a House bill in the U.S. House. I was like, did I pass a bill this week? No, this is a U.S. House bill. Okay. Congresswoman Meng from New York filed a resolution condemning discrimination and violent attacks on Asian Americans around the country as a result of COVID-19. And there's been disparaging words such as the Kung Fu flu and the China virus and the Chinese flu and so forth. And this actually has resulted in violent attacks on Asian Americans, not just Chinese Americans, which are the number one target, Chinese. But I mean, you know, there was a stabbing in Houston. There was a woman pushed onto the train tracks in New York. There was a woman attacked for wearing a mask before even COVID got really high. This issue was there. And part of the thing that's a little bit undersold in the news is the National Chinese Security Law. The National Chinese Security Law requires that anybody that does business in China hand over all their data if there's declared a national security risk. And the issue here is that with TikTok and WeChat and any other company that does business in China, if the Chinese government implement that law, it doesn't state where that data is located. It doesn't say that it only data located in China. It's any data held by the company. So if you're doing business in China and the Chinese government demands that you hand it over, well, your choice is get out of the country and stop doing business, or, you know, get arrested if you don't hand over the information. This is quite something that I think people understand that's going on this larger international scale here of economics. And China's buying power, because it's the largest country in the planet in commercial capacity, commercial buying capacity. You know, they're leveraging that against the rest of the world to push forward their so-called national security issues, which is basically forcing to comply with their political doctrines in order to continue to do business in China. And it's going to be interesting how U.S. companies respond over time, not just because of the need to diversify their infrastructure and their manufacturing and their supply chains beyond China, but also how they're going to respond to this. And TikTok, for those who know, is basically a type of social media that is designed to basically find similar social media through things that you look at. And people monetize it. I kind of stated earlier that it's like YouTube. You can monetize and make money, part of the economy. WeChat actually is a little bit different from WhatsApp or any other messengers that you use on your phone. It's actually a secure system in the sense that the administrator, the owner of WeChat, controls the chat rooms. So you can't build a chat room without their permission, and you need, there's a cap of like 500. And if you look at the software, we own the software on your phone, take a look for data encryption. Unlike WhatsApp and other companies that actually put right front and center, they use data encryption, there's no data encryption on WeChat. So every conversation you've had, or every picture, every recording, everything you've done, you have it out there, and anybody could hack their way in, or subpoena the government subpoena, whatever, to get the information, they can get at it. There is no privacy-ish type laws that are in this country, where even law enforcement has to cross certain barriers of civil rights in a court of law to get your information. I call it a search warrant. I mean, these are very time-tested parts of our Constitution over the course of centuries. China doesn't have that system. It's basically the government says, give it to us because we declared national security risk and got to hand it over. Here, Apple is fighting the FBI over data on a phone by a terrorist. So it's not about the terrorists. It's about all of us and the integrity of the company and our trust in the company to keep our information secure. So TikTok doesn't scare me as much in the sense it's more like Facebook. It's basically collecting data for marketing purposes. But WeChat should be concerning. If you're a WeChat user and you're listening to this, just be aware that your information is not encrypted. There's no data point-to-point encryption. So as a result, that information is probably sitting on a server somewhere, they claim in Canada and Singapore, that has no data security around it.
So do you think the ban is a good thing?
I think it's very problematic, because to actually ban a software based on cell phone technology requires the cell phone companies to ban the device's usage over the system. But how do you ban it over the wired internet? And then you also have to take it off the app stores, which is actually pretty easy to do. That's not a problem. You stop the updates. But we're not China. We don't have the so-called great firewall, because China can actually monitor, and their AI systems, artificial intelligence systems, will monitor and keep readjusting their firewall to keep certain information from flowing, whether it be keywords that are said in an email or on a website, or people who are accessing websites out of country that have certain keywords, pictures, or videos, or whatever, that triggers the artificial intelligence to say, we got to stop this. We have one of the most free internets in the world. There is little to no censoring of our internet. So I'm not sure how this is going to work in a practical world like the United States. We enjoy more freedoms than I think we appreciate on information access than anywhere else. And to now ban information access it's gonna be very challenging. I'm kind of curious how technology is gonna work. I get taking it off the app store, that's easy, but if it's on your phone and you're using your Wi-Fi or you're using a VPN, what do you do now? I'm not sure.
Right. That remains to be seen. Speaking of freedoms, we have the freedom to vote, of course. And this week, Tech, I got my voter information booklet from the Secretary of State's office. You see it in my virtual background there. And lo and behold, there's two ballot questions, not just one.
Yeah, no, it's a low number this year, given how it seems like we always get like four or five. It feels like anyway.
True.
So, two valid questions.
Yes.
Actually, the previous conversation about WeChat and TikTok and data security bleeds right into one of them, which is question one on the so-called right to repair.
Right.
So for those who don't know, the ballot process requires people to get enough signatures to put a question on the ballot. The question has to be one question on one topic, on one subject matter, meaning it has to be very narrowly crafted to address one particular subject matter. And it has to go before the legislature for us to review. And if we don't take any action by May, I believe it's May, I keep forgetting my dates now because COVID-19 has resulted in me forgetting my dates. I believe by May, then the proponents have to get more signatures to put on the ballot, which is what happened with these two ballot questions. Initially, with three. Okay. So called Cumberland and Farms question, they didn't make the ballot because they didn't get enough signatures, so they withdrew the question. So question one, right to repair. You're seeing a lot of TV commercials and ads and radio commercials and so forth and social media pop-ups about right to repair. So the bottom line is this. Right now, third-party car repair shops can get the information off your car through the computer system when they hook it up. Okay, so that's myth. That's a myth.
Okay.
You already have right to repair now. So if you take your party car to your third party repair shop, if they own the equipment, meaning they got to buy the equipment, they train to use it, and they own the parts, I mean, own the tools, then they can fix your car.
Okay. And a third party shop would be what?
Oh, any auto shop.
Okay.
So if I take my car to Murphy Brothers, for example, I have a Volkswagen Murphy Brothers, they are by law guaranteed the ability to purchase the tools and computer system to look at my car's diagnostics. So my car light goes off and it doesn't communicate in words. It doesn't say, please look at my rear tire. I think there's a nail. Cars don't do that.
Right.
They send codes out saying there's a dysfunction in this portion of the section of the car or this device or this section of whatever mechanical failure is. The sensor kicks off and then it'll send a code out saying we have a mechanical failure that should come up as the following things. And then they start the detective work to find out what's happening from there. So that's true. Now, what is also true in the commercials is that this bill does indeed allow anybody access to the data in your car.
Anyone.
So that it removes your privacy rights to the data in your car. Now, did you have privacy rights to the data in your car? The answer was not exactly. So all modern cars have a degree of Wi-Fi systems on there. Even if you don't have GPS or any of the fancy computer stuff, you still have some kind of wireless transmitter. And what it does is that it transmits any car malfunction to the manufacturer. So there's a reason why you get a recall notice, but you hear no incidents of any car accidents or car malfunctions. So there's a number of malfunctions that occur sufficient volume, the manufacturer will investigate and determine if it's a fault in the system and then put out recall notices to replace those parts. And people don't think about it, but you don't see in the news much about a car manufacturer malfunction causing a car accident.
True.
The last time we saw was the Dakota airbags and the issue regarding the braking system on Toyotas on the foot mats, but the computer system's designed to fight a manufacturer, even if it's a small malfunction and send the data straight to the manufacturers for investigation. Car's doing this all the time without your knowledge. The car also collects your GPS data. Every time you plug your Apple phone or iPhone or your Android phone into the car, the contacts are downloaded in there, your radio station preferences, even your weight, because certain cars have different weight requirements, the seating arrangement of your car. I mean, all this just lit, there's a whole lot of information you never realized that the car records. So the way the ballot question is written, it doesn't just address car repair information. That's a myth. It addresses all the information. And this is the part that I think is going to confuse the public. They're under some false impression your car can't get repaired at your favorite repair shop. That's false.
Okay.
It is true that one car company, Chevrolet, had actually used the wireless ability to get information to the car repair dealership. But that was like a very odd, isolated incident, I think. It was a strange story, and people kept saying, oh, they did it to us. They did, and they did it. It was kind of a unique, there's a more to that story than just, oh, they gave it to the car dealership for information. It's actually a bigger story there.
Okay.
But I mean, is it going to result in people being able to unlock your car and you get attacked? Maybe. I'm not saying yes, because if your car has electronic locks, like the one that you push the numbers on, and somebody has access to your computer system wirelessly, then they could fiddle with your lock system.
Okay.
So the answer is maybe.
Okay.
Is it, could it affect your codes to your garage? Maybe. Could it affect your OnStar? Most likely, yes. That one is probably going to be a yes. And they require that all this information goes to a single portal on the internet, so that car repair shops and third-party manufacturing parts and insurance company can go with that information. Do you want your insurance company to know where you've been? That's the last thing any of us wants, to be frank with you. Insurance companies would love to get their hands on this stuff so you can ding our insurance rates individually. So, you know, there's no stipulation who can get their information. So if you're a stalker, you, under the right to repair law, you actually do have right to get that information.
Okay. All right. So there is some truth to that argument.
Yeah. And it's also data security is also true too. So if you allow any portal on a website on the internet, it's not a one-way street. As we saw with Equifax and the big banks and Citibank, I mean, Citicards, you know, the car transaction companies, those guys have very high data security and they get breached. So imagine all your car data and your VIN numbers and your driving records and your, you know, all your personal information from your car sitting on a website somewhere that's supposed to be managed by car manufacturing industry, which is like a dozen of these guys who try to put money into data securing your information. But once that information leaves, that goes to you or me, I could take your information and just give it away.
Sure.
You never know. Or I could sell it.
Right, right, yeah.
So this is more complicated, I think, that the commercials give you credit for. So, I mean, obviously you can tell I'm not very supportive because of the fact that I believe that I should have control of my own data, and I think we'll agree upon that. There's a huge risk to me as a private individual that outweighs the benefit of letting everybody see it.
Yeah, yeah. So who's the money behind this, you know, support for this question? Is it? Yeah, insurance companies, manufacturers?
Yeah, it's manufacturers. Third-party manufacturing company is the biggest one out there. I think it's LQK. I can't remember the letters, but they make like 90% of all the third-party parts.
Okay.
They're the biggest financier. If you look at the bottom of the screen on the Super PAC, you see AutoZone. Not big surprise. They want to be able to advertise directly onto your computer system on the dash as they come here.
Okay.
They're out to kill a lot of independent repair shops that way by being using the ability to say, you know, on your computer screen, you need an oil change, come see us. Mm-hmm. Or you may get a phone call, an email from them saying, hey, come see us.
Okay.
The phone's transmitted the data out and they bought the data. So they access the data on the website, they can pull all the information out and they can target advertise to you. And since I said that the website is not clear on the two-way street, they could transmit stuff back into your car. And then your display starts coming up that stuff.
As opposed
to having the car manufacturer have to access the car manufacturer for that information to come up on your display.
Okay. All right. Interesting to see how that plans out, because there is some truth to both commercials, it seems like, but not full truth to both commercials.
Yeah, the one commercial that's been most straightforward was the one with the against question one, the repair guy. Against
question that. Yes.
Yeah, he's the most accurate because he says the least complicated.
Right. I think he says words to the effect that I can already fix your car, something like that.
That is true.
Okay.
That's why it's the best commercial. It's the one that's the least complicated to understand.
Okay. Talk about complicated. The ranked choice voting question, I have read through 3 times and it still can't make heads or tails out of it.
Yeah, well, this is going to be the problem for everybody in ranked choice voting. I noticed a lot of young people pushing it, particularly under age 30, are pushing for ranked choice voting. And it basically eliminates Democratic Republican primaries and it moves to a point system. So let's see if I can keep this simple for all of us. You have 5 candidates. There is no primary. All 5 candidates appear in November ballot. Okay, simple enough. This is not a new way of voting for people. As opposed to picking one out of five, each candidate you assign a point of 1 to 5, 5 point, 4 point, 3 point, 1 point. And you can choose to assign how many points to each candidate. When the vote is tallied, they're not tallied by total votes cast for a candidate. They're tallied by total points collected by the candidate. So you could come out winning the majority of votes, but lose on points.
So you can have, can you assign a different number of points for your first choice?
Yeah. So for example, your first choice would be 5 points in a five-way situation.
Okay.
Second choice gets 4 points, your third choice gets 3 points, and so forth to 1 point. You do not have to assign points to everyone. You can assign just one person 5 points and zero to everybody else. For example, pick 1, 5, and 3, and then but there's no 2 and 1, which actually skews the math pretty interestingly. It's not like you can say, no, I like Joe, but I don't like him enough. I'm going to vote for Joe, but I think he's only worth 1 point, not worth five, because I want to keep Joe, but he's not doing a good enough job. I should give him 1 point. Okay. You can't do that. Your first choice gets 5.
Okay.
Okay. It isn't a grading system. This is not, you know, a report card on your elected official. It's a assignment of points to candidates for office if you choose to assign points.
Okay. Who's behind this one, Tacky?
This is not a new issue. It's been going on for decades. I mean, there was once a political party, I think called the World Choice Party, that was advocating this on a global level. It's been brought before the UN. It's been done in some communities. So Cambridge is the one we always point to, who has this type of system where you have 9 city councils running simultaneously on a point-based system. So the lead vote getter gets a total of like 22% of the vote cast in favor. Unlike a pick top 9, it's like assigned points, and it gets really ugly in terms of the math. The tally takes days to do. So, you know, if you don't like the primary system and you believe that everybody should be in the ballot together simultaneously, and you believe that you should have the ability to rank them, give them points, or that you feel each one deserves, you should vote for this. If you think that you want to, people should be able to pick one candidate for one office to win, or pick 3 out of 6 candidates to win, in the case of like a city councilor at large, then vote against it. As a person who tries to advocate people to vote and teach people to vote, this is hard to teach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it sounds like it's essentially 2 elections in 1, really, and you'd have to count the ballots twice, one for the ballot count, one for the point count.
That's correct, and it won't match up. It's not always going to match up. So just because you win the most physical ballot of votes doesn't mean you can win this election.
Right, okay.
And it's also kind of weird because you're looking at the points. So, you know, you could have like a second or third tier person beat the one of them, you know, get some more votes as a number one. It's very bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit earlier before we keep getting started this program about blanking votes. So if I didn't like one of the candidates, I could blank one of them so they wouldn't get a point. Right. But you never know which one. So how do I know that, how am I gauging my voters? So, you know, not like I want to see blank votes in my elections, but it gives us an indicator as an elected official or a candidate what the mood of the public is based on the people who submit ballots and voice protest by not actually submitting a name.
Right. This would essentially eliminate that. Your statements, political statement, whatever it would be null and void.
And it gets even harder on writing candidates, right? People have won writing campaigns in the state. Mm-hmm. It has happened. So don't think it's like a mythical idea. It does happen. People can win writing campaigns. So in a point system, how do you do a point system 1 to 5, but you really want to have a sixth candidate on there?
Okay. It's interesting to see what this pans out as well. Who's the funding behind the support of this? Do you know?
I have to look it up. I got a fundraising request from this organization sitting somewhere buried on my desk looking for a donation for their cause. But I think I understand the idea of needing to change the editorial process, but this just makes it harder, even though the claim it gives everyone more of a fair chance. And like we just talked about two things, blank voting and write-in voting. There's no accommodation for write-in voting. It was a write-in voting. It's not 1-5. It's 1-6.
Or however many you write in, yeah.
That's correct. So now you disenfranchised potential write-in voters.
Yeah. It sounds a little bit more confusing than the Electoral College at the federal level. That's being
that I can explain in 15 or less minutes. That one I can actually explain. Being the poli sci history guy that I am, I can actually explain Electoral College better than ranked choice voting.
We're getting close to, I know you have a meeting coming up soon, but I thought we could ask you for a census update.
Sure. We're doing remarkable in the census. Nationally, as of September 18th, we're at 66%. So nationally, self-reporting. Massachusetts self-reporting is at 68.5%. But Quincy is at 68.4. We've closed that gap.
Okay. Huge
on the state one from last week. And Quincy has now exceeded the 2010 self-reporting. We self-reported at 68.1. So now we're at 68.4. So good job, everybody. Thank you very much for beating 2010. But we're still lagging a little bit behind our neighbors. Weymouth's at 74.3. They've already ahead of the 210 number. Braintree's at 78.8, also ahead of the 210 number. Randolph's at 70 even, again, also ahead of the 2010 number. And Milton's at 82%, and they blew past their 2010 number. One of the interesting things going on is that we're now doing reporting as well on door knocking, telephone, visiting folks again. Census takers will not ever ask for money, never ask for personal information. They're here to, you know, help you fill out the census. If you're not sure, call my office. We'll help get verification if this is a real person or a scam. So you never give your money or personal financial information out to anybody. But with that said, Massachusetts is approaching about 95% of people have reported already in Massachusetts with the additional door knockers and other folks.
Mm-hmm.
Nationally, it's about 93.6%, including door knockers. So we're closing in on 100. So there's about 100 and almost 80 million households in this country. And that's how we do the census by household. Places like Father Bill's and homeless shelters and so forth need to be counted too.
Yes. Yeah. Nursing homes, I know, places like that. Yep.
Yeah, they're not part of a household, well, I mean, right. Obviously. So, I mean, that effort is still going on. It's crucial to get every single person counted. It doesn't matter where you are at all. So I'm hoping that if it is closing on 95%, and that's true in Quincy as well as part of the overall count, we'll get to 100,000 people in Quincy, and they'll make a huge change in the U.S. HUD CGDB formulas. And a more accurate count of our population, a better reflection helps me immensely in advocating on Beacon Hill for resources back to the city. So if you haven't filled out your form yet, please do so at 2020census.gov. And that saves a person from having to come to visit your home. We got to October 31st to get this done. On another note, a situation which I keep telling people about scams, this is not a scam. The census is collecting COVID data. They started at the beginning of September. They are now doing a census, the census data on that. Now, it's not the census form, which is the 2020 census. This is a different type of survey to find out the economic, the social, and the health impacts on COVID-19. So even if you didn't get COVID-19, they want to know what the, you know, health impacts psychologically. It's not like they're asking for in-depth medical information. It's just quick check boxes.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, if you know what the economic impact has as a result of COVID-19, like Massachusetts employment rate is 16%, you know, how is this affecting your life? And it takes about 20 minutes-ish to fill out the survey. So if you get it by text message, the text message SMS is 39242. 39242 is the census SMS for COVID-19. And the email would be covid.survey@census.gov. covid.survey@census.gov is the email you would receive. Of course, there's also paper as well.
Okay.
So, please do not mistake this for the U.S. Census, the 2020 Census. It is a different survey, but it's equally important for government agencies to have a big picture idea of the impact of COVID-19 on our day-to-day lives.
All right. Good to know. Be on the lookout for that. I have not seen that as of yet. So if it does come, I'll thank you for letting me know it's not a scam.
It is not a scam. I spend a lot of time telling people what scams it feels like. But sure. With this time, it is not a scam.
Good ways to reach out to you, Techie.
As always, give the office a call at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Leave a message for anybody and they'll pick it up and we'll get working on it. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Again, I'm getting crushed on emails, so if it's really important, please call the office. And then, you know, my Facebook site, Tacky Chan, State Representative Tacky Chan, Facebook has a lot of information. We're posting, like we just talked about here in the census up this weekend, as well as tackychan.org, O-R-G. We put the podcast like this up on there. So you can see my haircut over the course of many weeks.
Yes.
My hair length and rise and fall of tacky hair. So tune in on my website just to click the QATV part, just to look, laugh my hair. You're more than welcome to do that.
Yes, you can go back to some of the shows in May and June, and then the more recent ones, you'll see the difference.
Exactly. Don't worry about the content. Just look for the hair.
All right. Thanks so much, Tacky. Great to see you.
Good to see you. I'll see you again next week.
All right. Take care.